In this episode, we'll be discussing mental health. We're not mental health experts, just two best friends with a podcast talking about our experience with mental health. If you or someone you know is in need of mental health resources, we've included a link in the episode description.
Welcome to HQ Wave Radio. I'm Francis.
And I'm Alana.
And this is a show about two
best friends. Yay. You know, the most awkward part about starting an episode is like how to start it. I never know how to start.
Or do you want me to start?
Yeah.
Welcome back, everybody, to HQAF Radio and the next installment of our mental health series. Today, we have a special guest, Allie, calling in from California. How you doing, girl?
I am great.
So, Allie and I have known each other since high school, senior year of high school.
Yep.
One of my very first friends. And you know Alana through college. So we've known each other, like all together, we've all known each other for a very long time, like over a decade, I believe. And she's a very special guest, and we have invited her on the show because, like Alana and myself, like we just, she's very open with mental health and like has a lot of experience, and just, you know, like invited her to kind of share that experience with us.
Well, and I wanted to note that tomorrow actually marks the 8-year anniversary. Allie, you know what's good.
Oh my gosh.
8 years ago, tomorrow is the first time I ever met Allie, and we regard that as our friendship anniversary. And I think Allie was actually the first friend where I started celebrating friendship anniversaries because, I had it in my calendar because it was that first Volition meeting that I went to, and then I like made a pitch to be on your team because when I met you and I saw you, I knew we were going to be best friends. And Allie is sort of, you know, the piece that completes the friendship trifecta, we like to call the three of us, because had I not met Allie, I would have never met Francis. And Allie is also kind of connected to the origin story of Francis and I, because Allie was the one who recommended that we hang out and become friends. And it was just, I don't know, you know, the stars aligning. So Allie is like, just bringing all the positive vibes, man.
Friendship,
she is fantastic. Yes, exactly. Exactly. Francis, did you provide Allie context? Like, this is a series and this is what we're going to be talking about.
I don't think so, but why don't we just kind of start with the beginning? So I think I told you, Allie, I had seen a counselor, and I've been starting to feel a little bit better, but I'd been taking like steps to actively make sure I was better. So I've been, journaling more. I've been like just doing little projects. I have been exercising more and just trying to like, one, like do things for myself, and then two, like kind of remove myself from those negative energies that was really bringing me down July, August timeframe.
Yeah.
And so one of the things I was just like, you know, I think we're all kind of going through this. We should just talk about mental health. And, this has been like a pretty real thing for me. And, you know, I know Alana's had been like very open about her experience with mental health. And I know you've been very open. So I was like, hey, we should just like go and talk and have this thing where we kind of explore different aspects of mental health. So our last episode, we just kind of talked very generally about like our history with mental health, how society's kind of shifted from, at least when I was growing up, you know, I've never felt comfortable talking about my feelings. Partly because, sure, you know, that was something my family never really did. And then another part of it is like, you know, growing up, you have this idea of masculinity if you have to go to the therapy, you were weak. If you had to talk about your feelings, you were weak. And so you never really felt comfortable in that sort of space. And so, you know, fast forward to now, You know, we get ads that are targeted to us about like, oh, you know, if you need to talk to a therapist, here's an app. You know, like it's so much more accessible now. And
it is.
And so really just wanted to explore that and just kind of talk about our own experiences with mental health and therapy and all that fun stuff. So
I'm pro therapy, pro mental wellness. So
I remember at the very beginning of quarantine when everything was shut down and we were all in quarantine and people were saying, oh man, you know, this pandemic, right? Like puts a lot of things into perspective. It really makes you realize the important things in life because that's all that you can focus on. Everything else is closed. I agree. I definitely, you know, value my health a lot more than I did. I value the people in my life who are helping me like get through this, you know, and supporting my mental health. But the other realization I had too, when I was thinking about, because right before COVID happened, I was very stressed out, which led to me like grinding my teeth a lot and like getting a hairline fracture in my tooth. And I remember I was stressed out because I was gunning for that promotion. So I'm doing all these people's jobs. And so I was thinking about, man, I really miss, not necessarily miss like what stress was before COVID, but I almost kind of feel like, God, I really stressed about stupid shit. Maybe it ties into like, oh, what's really important? I'm like, oh, I wish I hadn't stressed so much about that because this is way more stressful, right? Like, I don't want to die today is way more stressful than I really want that promotion. Like, I mean, I do want it, but it's just like, God, I just really like, I get in my own head and I just like, I'm really extra about everything. So naturally I stressed a lot about it. So I almost wish I had like stressed less before I had to be stressed all the time.
Right. Oh, I feel you. I literally quit my job and took a mental health sabbatical and spent all of February doing what we're all forced to do now. I was just indoors quarantining for my mental health, not even because I had to. And I was like, and then March rolled around and I was like, you know what? I feel a lot better. I feel refreshed. I'm going to go like join some classes and do some things out in the world. And then the world was like, nah, dog.
Stay back inside, girl.
You just got to stay inside forever now. And I was like, fuck. And I was just like, yeah, hindsight's 2020. You're like, oh God. I read the other day, like, do you think when people have been saying this phrase because a time traveler was like, listen, people, you need to be prepared.
So why don't you start, Allie? What has been your history with mental health and therapy?
How long is this podcast? Mental health. I have engaged with therapy in particular for two periods of my life. The first period was in college, where I saw a counselor briefly to treat an eating disorder and bulimia. And then the second round, which I've been at for over 5 years now since 2015, was after a really bad domestic partnership came to head after I moved to LA. And basically my mental health history is definitely rooted in growing up in a traumatic home, which I'm sure is so many people's journey. I mean, it's a blessing if it's not. And I certainly would never wish anyone to have had a traumatic home life, but that is definitely my story. In particular, a mentally ill mom who was abusive, and then a dad who was somewhat absentee. Even though he and I have a better relationship now. Excuse me. Yeah, so growing up with her, my mother, definitely set into motion a lot of, because of the trauma, just set into motion a lot of sort of bad habits and bad way of going about life. I mean, on one hand, I also, and again, this is a lot of other people's story too. It's like, it did help me gain resiliency, tenacity. in that sense. But I also attribute a lot of my strength and like getting through it to the family I built through friends. Like definitely meeting Francis senior year. We had another mutual friend who unfortunately we've fallen out with, but she was a big part of it too for a long time. Just having close friends to turn to, especially when we all sort of were misfits who were living in home lives that were problematic to whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, I know Francis, you and I definitely bonded many times over the years over various traumas we were experiencing, both with family, with friends, with peers, with jobs, whatever. So again, just like growing up in that environment, I mean, the big things that came out of it were, I would say the biggest thing was definitely like suppressing emotions, compartmentalizing to a fault, to where it was an issue. Compartmentalizing it can be a great skill. It's necessary to survive trauma. And it is actually, it helped me at various other traumatic points in my life. But on the other hand, it's the sort of thing that untreated and unrecognized leads you to suppress the bad things happening around you. And so that's definitely a thing I unfortunately developed because of my mother in particular. And just I'll just give a tiny bit of history about her, and that she is bipolar, suffers from depression, anxiety, a lot of other issues. She's a classic narcissist. And so that's sort of the underpinnings of what I was dealing with. Definitely a direct lineage from her to the bad domestic partnership I had that came to a head once I moved to LA. I mean, there's so much more to that, but that's the Reader's Digest.
And, you know, you brought up an interesting point. You were saying earlier, I feel like everyone, right, has their own trauma that they experience when they're a child. If you don't, right, it's a blessing, and that's incredible. And, you know, that's wonderful. And we wouldn't wish a childhood trauma on anyone. And I feel like that brings up the question then, because I feel like, as you said, we're all going through things, or we all have unprocessed trauma. And it's difficult sometimes to maybe recognize, oh, this is a situation, or this is a problem that I need professional help. Or maybe it's the stigma that we previously experienced that keeps us from getting the help that we need. And so my question to you is, was there how and when did you get into therapy? Or was there a certain instance or someone reaching out saying, hey, you know, this would benefit you? Or did you kind of just realize, oh, this is so much that now is the time to really unpack this? Like before, you were in survival mode. It was just about getting through your childhood, through your teens, and then getting the fuck out of your house, right? Moving as far away as possible. What was that moment, that reckoning in which you realized this would be very helpful, and now is the time?
Yeah, good question. So for growing up in that environment, it's just like you said, like you're in survival mode, and that's at the forefront. So, and I was pretty much in that for a really long time. I was still like, because I wasn't in therapy, I was recreating my trauma over and over through bad relationships or bad situations. In college, definitely meeting you, Alana. I mean, I think this was, we had chatted about this earlier, but you have always just been such an open person about how great therapy is and how much it helped you at points. And you definitely got into my head. I think that was a seed that got planted from you. And I should note that, aside from just survival mode and dealing with, you know, all that trauma, like there's also another layer in that my dad's side of the family, like, we don't talk about feelings. You suppress emotions, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, figure out your life. You definitely don't need a mental health expert to get you there. Like that's sort of the mentality on my father's side of the family. Not to say everyone on that side of the family thinks that way, but that's sort of the underlying.
It seems to be a very generational kind of thing.
I think so. And I also think it is somewhat American too. It's like an American for the longest time anyway, until recent years. I think there was for a very long time, there's just such a stigma, right? There's a giant stigma around mental health, mental issues, addressing them, being open about them.
Well, so what's interesting is actually, you know, I was catching up with my sister, Donica, and she's living in the Netherlands. And for her, it's actually very hard for her to find a therapist. It's almost like you need to have a prescribed reason. So like the way you go about getting a talking to a therapist, you have to talk to your general physician first and actually be like referred to a specialist and therefore, you know, a therapist. And you really can't go for a specific reason. And yeah, I'm not entirely sure what that is, but it seemed to me that even when she was talking amongst her peers, they were like, oh, why do you need to see one? Almost like, I guess the tone that I got from it was very defensive. Like, well, is something actually wrong with you? Versus like, oh, maybe this is just something you need to do to maintain your mental health. Like, you don't need to go because there's something wrong in particular, you know?
Wow, that's surprising.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had the same thought that you did too. And it sort of enlightened me to how progressive America is in some aspects, at least, you know, between America and the Netherlands and my sister's experience over there.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious now about other countries' experience with that. And maybe just need to do a little research. I think now I'm curious. That's disappointing though. That's disappointing. Yeah, in terms of the big moments that got me into therapy in particular, I mentioned in college, you know, Alana planted the seed, therapy's good. And in my last semester of college, I was handling a lot of stress. I was sort of in and out again with a bad partner, and that was fucking with my head. And unfortunately, all of the sort of like body dysmorphia and issues with body image I sort of had since my teenage years came back to light. And in particular, I started, I was a bulimic in that period. And that was a definite byproduct of wanting to feel any semblance of like control over all the stress I was feeling. Obviously, like college is tough enough. All the stress of like trying to graduate and whatnot and whatever you're sort of engaged with. And of course, I was always trying to do like every honors course, every thesis thing, all that sort of stuff. So that wasn't helping. But, you know, I'm in the midst of all of this, of just being, you know, bulimia and body dysmorphia. And at some point, I don't really remember the exact moment, but I just sort of woke up and was like, I need help for this. This is a problem. This is not healthy. I mean, it's a sort of thing where like, and maybe everyone has a different relationship in terms of like body image issues and eating disorders, but like, I was always aware that it was a bad thing. And it was definitely like tied to a sense of shame where I was like, mm-hmm. you know, it was very private. I couldn't even really be open about it back then. I was writing about it in a way, in a sort of like abstract way. And like, so I was a creative writing major. So like in some of my art and some of my work, I was writing about it, but I was being very like, again, like abstract about it. And that just mm-hmm. wasn't cutting it. You know, art had been a place where I could sort of like process emotions, but that's not enough. Not when you're like, damaging your body. So then I was like, well, what the hell? You know, so George Mason University is where I went to school, and they had a free counseling program available to students. So I just decided to go and give it a shot. And I went in, and a short story is that it definitely did help. It since going to that counseling for about a month, I haven't reverted into any bulimia, and I've definitely had a much healthier outlook over body image and whatnot. So it did help on that layer. But the unfortunate part is that it was a really clinical atmosphere, which doesn't work for me. And the person I was seeing was a master's student. So she was like, I was like one of many on a sort of like list of like case studies to help her sort of qualify to earn her degree. And you could tell, you know, like she was very like rehearsed in what she would ask. She wasn't developing sort of like larger connections between, hey, you have this eating disorder and maybe there's things causing it. She definitely never got to the root of my partnership ever being a potential, my romantic partnership being a potential reason for it. And she never really dove into asking me about anything on that aspect of my life. And so, I mean, I don't blame her because I was also very protective and like not willing to address the issues of that realm of my life at that time. But I think if a more experienced person had been assigned to me, they probably would have seen through the lines a little bit more clearly. And so, well, again, it's like, I recommend seeing a counselor if you're in college and you need help. I would just say, like, if you feel like maybe you're not connecting that well or there's things that could be better addressed, then you should just ask for someone else.
Yeah, that's interesting because I think, you know, I had just first started getting into counseling / therapy. And actually, one of the things that confused me kind of researching into it. So, like my short backstory is that I was using my company's employee assistance program to find help for mental health. Like they through benefits to offer like access to mental health experts. And so I went through, I applied for the program, and first things first, like I noticed that it was kind of weird a process. Like you have to talk to somebody to get matched, and you have to like first go through like your entire, I guess, sort of your like your mental profile. How old am I? Am I experiencing any substance abuse issues? Am I experiencing any sort of medical issues? Am I gay? Yeah. Am I religious? Like go through that whole thing with this person first. Then they match you with somebody and then you go through that whole exercise again. And, you know, it just felt kind of uncomfortable. But after that, I was having like this kind of weird experience with my counselor where I just sort of felt not very connected to him, like very much in the same way you were describing your first therapist. And I was like looking into it more, and I didn't even realize that there was a difference between counseling and therapy. Right. Like my counselor kind of felt like I was just being prescribed like solutions to a problem. And I didn't really feel like I was solving any of those problems really. Like he gave me tools, like, and I am taking away some of those tools now into my, sort of mental health routine, but I never felt like he was helping me address the root of the issues, which I never got from him. And so I guess like the point that you bring up of like figuring out the right therapist for you is a very interesting one. I guess between you and Alana, who's got a lot more experience with therapy than I do, how do you know when you find the right one? Like how do you, what does the connection feel like when you feel like you're really getting a good session?
Yeah. Well, my current therapist is amazing. And so in finding her, the short version of how I came to her is, so I moved to LA in 2013, and then in 2014, my domestic partnership I was in ended in some violence. Already 6 years of mental abuse and dealing with someone who was essentially a sociopath, or what is a sociopath, but it led to sexual assault, and I was raped by him, and that put me into obviously an incredibly fucked up place, as it does anybody who has ever unfortunately experienced that. So I was in this really dark place in the aftermath of that. And after it happened for like a month, I was so in denial. It was like the stages of grief where I was just like, maybe it wasn't rape. Maybe it was something else. Like maybe I did something wrong and I, you know, whatever, whatever. Like I was definitely questioning myself, and it definitely took friends to sort of make me aware of like, no, that's what it was. And you need help. The first step was just like moving into a new place and sort of getting settled into a new atmosphere. Excuse me. And I did. And, but you know, that doesn't fix anything. You're still like in the aftermath of a massive trauma and you need to address it. But of course, because of the environment I grew up in with my mother, which was, hey, let's people please, and let's not talk about our feelings. I was just like, well, I'm sure like I've figured out other things on my own. I can figure this out. And I just sort of tried to cling to a routine of let's go to work. Let's come home. Let's, you know, do these normal things. And I slowly started to realize I wasn't going to cut it once I realized I had PTSD and there were all these triggers that were just constantly putting me back into this traumatic space. So at the time where I lived, I was like a 2-hour commute from my job. And often at night when I was coming home, I would catch this show called Love Lines. I don't think it's on the air anymore, but it's hosted by a Dr. Drew Pinsky and this guy called Psycho Mike. And it's a really popular, well-known show. It was for a really long time. And basically, it's a radio call-in program. People call in to get medical advice and relationship advice. Usually it's like Jerry Springer kind of stuff. It's really amusing and crazy. But sometimes people will call in with serious questions. And I decided one day after experiencing some PTSD again, I was like, I'm just going to call and ask them. What I needed was someone like Dr. Drew to be like, yeah, you need therapy, dumbass. Like, I needed someone to just not, like, slap me aside, you know, and just... What I needed probably was like some sort of parental figure giving me advice. But of course, like I keep family at arm's length and, you know, my dad and I have a good relationship, but like, it's not one where I'm going to be like telling him what I'm going through in a mental health way, like on a day to day. So like, unfortunately, not many people really knew the depths of what I was going through. Like I was super depressed, definitely having suicidal thoughts, not in a good place. So I call Love Line and I use a fake name and I'm basically like, hey, Dr. Drew and Psycho Mike. I was raped. I know that I probably need therapy, but I've been raised to just deal with life by myself and pull myself up on my bootstraps. And it's not really working. Should I just bite the bullet, go to therapy, or are there other things I can be doing to just sort of help myself? And immediately I couldn't even finish the question. And Dr. Drew was like, if there's a way, if you can go to a therapist and there's a chance that that person's going to help you have a better quality of life, why wouldn't you do that? What is stopping you? And that's what I needed to hear. I just needed an adult person with experience in mental health who makes it fun in the way that a show like that is to be like, no, you need help. And so Dr. Drew inspired me to go finally get therapy. Yeah. So I'm sure that a lot of people who listen to that show have a similar experience, but it's just so ridiculous and amusing to me. And that was in February of 2015. And pretty soon after, I contacted this network out here that gears toward women in particular for therapy services. And I had to fill out this form. And I'm like, here's what I'm dealing with, blah, 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 blah. And they connected me with my therapist. And I think it was just, I mean, it could have gone a lot of ways. Maybe I could have gotten someone who was awful, but they connected me with the person I've been seeing now for 5.5 years. And it's been wonderful.
Wow.
She's a marriage and family therapist, and she's got a lot of experience under her belt compared to the counselor I saw in college. So I definitely think that helped. Yeah. And it's been, I think how I knew it was the right therapist is that I felt very comfortable being transparent with her, and she very easily and readily called me out on bullshit. You know, like I'm not going to be able to get away with like trying to push certain things aside. Like she's going to hone in on it. And she also just had, again, based on her experience, she was able to immediately tell me why I was experiencing certain feelings or why I might have entered into a bad partnership like that in the first place, which is recreating the traumatic relationship with my mother, right? And like other sources of trauma and like just breaking down all those things. And it was so effortless. Like she just knew what to say and how to push me forward. And I think you just sort of have little indicators like that to be a sign.
Yeah. It's almost like finding a right relationship, like in any relationship, really, like best friends or boyfriends or partners or whatever. There's got to be sort of like that right connection. Like every person is different, and you know, you need a certain thing that you found, and you found the right therapist that gives you that thing. So that's awesome.
Yeah. Grateful.
It sounds like I just need to keep looking for the right fit and probably figure out what the difference is between counseling and therapy. Cause I really feel like it.
I definitely am a big fan of like cognitive therapy. Again, my therapist is a marriage and family therapist, and so MFT. And so I don't know, like, also, like, she has a lot of experience with certain things that I was looking for, and you know, that was sort of listed on her bio. And I don't know, like, if you were shopping around, you could look for people who sort of specialize in whatever it is you want to address to.
Yeah. One of the things, like, with my last counselor, that really turned me off from him. He knew I was gay, but I, you know, like, that was one of the first survey questions they ask you, is like, oh, are you LGBTQ? And I said yes. And the follow-up question is like, do you want to be paired with somebody that specializes in this issue? And at that time, you know, I just wasn't feeling like my depression was related to me being gay. It just felt like, okay, well, the pandemic's going on, people really suck right now, like, I'm just not in a right headspace, but it's not because I'm gay. So, you know, I checked no. Like, I didn't need them to be specialized in gay issues. And he continued to kind of push on me religious advice, which is what was sort of off-putting for me. Yeah, like, he sent me to like this hotline that was run by a church, and he just like recommended I listen to like the sermon of the week, and I was like, you know, like, no. And that was like one of the first questions he asked me, is like, am I religious? And I said no. And for him to continue to push that on me, you know, like four sessions in, is just not, you know, it just didn't feel right to me, and I did not have that kind of connection with him.
That is strange, especially if, like, I mean, I guess if his counseling center is like religious based, maybe then it's like, oh, okay, that's sort of a given. But otherwise, like, it's not, I don't think it's even like I don't think legal is the right word, but like, I don't think it's generally a part of
like ethical. Like,
ethical practice, exactly. Thank you. For a therapist to be like talking about religion that way, pushing it, unless you brought it up and wanted to discuss it.
Yeah, and that was exactly kind of echoing what Allie was saying. Is I think the right way to find a therapist is kind of figuring out or sitting down if there's a way you can find someone that specializes in a certain field, and then that way that'll kind of foster or facilitate a better connection, because you're working on the things that you want to work on, one. And then two, I also wanted to speak to, as someone, so when I went to therapy a long time, I think either over a decade or about a decade consecutively. And I actually went because I was in college for, and then working part-time, or maybe high school through college. Either way, I'm a broke lady. I don't have a lot of money to go to therapy. Mm-hmm. And so how I went and did therapy was through this clinic where, similar to Allie's first experience, you're talking to someone who doesn't have all of their, I think they're working, they have their master's, but they're working on their PhD. So you're coming in there, and it's this specific organization or this clinic was Catholic. And so when I start with them, or when anyone starts with them, because I actually recommended this organization to everyone, even if you're not Catholic, because the reason being that the religious aspect never really came up. And even on their forums, they say, oh, do you recognize, or are you okay with the fact that we are a religious organization? We are a Catholic organization. So that just means that we recognize that God is a thing. Like, we'll say that God is a thing, but not that we're going to push God or say God's going to solve all your issues. And so, because I went to therapy a long time at this clinic, and that was never like, no one ever told me to pray the sadness away. Like, it's, you know, very real people. It's just that they would, you know, when it came up, like, prayer would be part of the conversation or God would be part of the conversation, but it was never like the leading part. And I had, right. I recommend this organization to a lot of people, especially people. The other aspect of it being Catholic meant that it was very cost effective. So, you know, hey, we recognize that not everyone has the money to pay. And also these were, you know, grad students. So that was probably a thing too, but they had a sliding scale. So I would actually be able to afford going to these, you know, hour long sessions because they, you know, adjusted the pricing based on your income. And so, yeah. And because of that, the cost effective aspect and the fact that, yes, they're a religious organization, but they won't push it. I recommended that organization to a lot of people, and a lot of people had a very many great experiences with it. Even those that do not, you know, are not religious, are not Catholic, like that never was at the forefront. So I'm super surprised, Francis, that that was your experience. And that wasn't even, I'm assuming that the organization that supplements or provides this program isn't like specifically religious, because I went to a specifically religious organization that was just never at the forefront of our conversations or what we worked on.
Yeah. And, you know, like not to knock people who find comfort in religious, it's just you know, in religion, it's just, you know, especially, I think what, you know, if that the counselor is like recommending that to his clients, that's completely fine. He just should have known that I'm not going to find comfort in that, you know, like that's yeah. the sort of thing that I would expect him to know or remember or, you know, kind of sense that that's not my cup of tea and we should just like kind of focus on other things. Like, yeah. Right. Yeah.
You know, I also wanted to say too, I think people should normalize as we're, as we're all really happy that we're moving in the direction of, you know, supporting mental health and facilitating more people going and seeing therapists, we should also, so normalizing therapy is great. We should also normalize changing therapists, right? Because yeah. I think yeah. sometimes yeah. it's awkward. You don't want to change because, you know, you don't want to hurt their feelings, right?
Oh my God.
You know, people like I've even experienced it myself. But I'm very much someone, and I think it's just because I've had so many years of experience with therapy that I very much kind of know right off the bat, hey, this isn't like working for me. So I'm very transparent about that. But I think other people maybe feel like, oh, well, I just don't want to be rude. But I think the way to overcome that is thinking about it in the sense of this is my journey and this is their job. And so like, yeah. if this is not working on, you know, them as a professional isn't helping me in my life, like that is totally kosher to say, hey, I need someone else. And I just think, yeah, people sometimes feel awkward, which I understand, you know, people don't want to be mean to anyone, but I think we have to normalize seeing it in a different lens. It's not being yeah. mean, it's just being true to yourself.
Yeah, that's
100%.
That's a great point. I had the same feeling because I think I knew straight off that this is kind of weird for me. Like my experience with him, I had enough the fourth session into the picture, but you know, like, I kind of got that sense of like this isn't right for me, but you know, maybe I'm just not doing therapy right, or maybe like that was at the top is a process even fine. This time was already traumatic enough. Like I had sort of like this barrier of coming to therapy to begin with, because this was my first time coming to it. I had a lot of kind of stuff to kind of work through to even get to myself to that point. Like Chris had to convince me to go see yeah. the therapist, to have to go through the question and answer process, not once, but twice to kind of talk to a professional. I just felt hesitant to go through that entire process again. And then like, to continue, like, I actually like, I don't want to say like my sessions were bad, but like I left feeling those sessions feeling worse than I did before. Like I felt like crying, like a lot of times. And, you know, like it was just like, oh, do I really want to continue to go down this road in therapy? But you're absolutely right. Like sometimes the connection with your counselor just isn't the right one. And don't let that discourage you from trying to find another one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I there's got to be someone out there. It's just I mean, this is a little bit of a leap, but it's definitely like, well, no, I guess it's not. But it's like finding the right doctor, right? Like, yeah, bedside manner means more to some than others. Or finding the right hairstylist, someone who like clicks with what you want and your vision. Like, any sort of service you're going to treat in that way where you're going to not settle for less than what you want and what meets your needs. So I think mental health, it's the same thing. It's just like recognizing if something's not clicking, they don't understand, they don't hear you the right way, and just trying again and keeping at it.
Yeah. And definitely if there's an aspect of, oh, well, I don't want to tell them directly, hey, this isn't working out, or you suck. Like, no one ever wants to just say directly to someone, say, like, you know, you just kind of suck at your job. You can always pull the Lana, which is what I tell people, or what I've told therapists when it's not working out. You know what? I thought I had the time for therapy and to work on my issues. Turns out I don't. Or, hey, I got a new job. And you can just stop seeing them and, like, then, you know, make an appointment with someone new.
You mean the therapists aren't like, wow, you're just being passive aggressive? Like,
no, well, because they don't know, right? Because yeah, you could just say, hey, like, it's not working out this way. And then just, like, go and see someone else and they don't have to know. And also, it's just, like, not their, you know, it's not like they're going to call you up, like, hey, I heard you were going, if you're going within the same organization, right? That's not their place to call them out. So you could pull them on and just be, you know what? I just, like, don't have the time for this, but you secretly do. And you just see someone else. But yeah, no, for sure, you don't want to spend time with someone that's not clicking. Yeah. And
out of curiosity, do the therapists ever go and be like, well, is this session helping for you? Like, are you finding value? You know, like, do they ever ask, kind of turn the lens back on, and have you turn the lens on them, I guess, is, you know what I mean? Like,
asking for feedback.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause know, like, hey, yeah, like, do they actively seek to make you better? And, you know, and I guess the next question would be like, do they say, well, if these sessions aren't helping you, if the style of therapy isn't helping you, you know, here are some others that we would recommend.
So I can speak to that, although I will say or preface this point with the fact that because I went to a graduate school program, all of these therapists, right, are working towards their PhD. So I'm, you know, a part of that process. So I would say, you know, I don't know if that means that, like, the therapists were almost extra focused on receiving feedback, not just on them, but also on from me, like, hey, is this helping you? And also, you know, am I helping you? There was a really big focus on that. I recall, you know, once every 6 weeks, I would fill out a form and I would kind of check in, like, okay, you know, and they would have the same questions and I would kind of rate different aspects of my feelings, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10. And then I would provide feedback, like, okay, this was an issue when you came in. How are you feeling about it now? But I do think that because it was part of this program, there was this extra emphasis. So I'd be interested in actually, like, Allie's take or experience, since you're seeing kind of a formal, like, already has all of the degrees and practicing therapist person.
Yeah, no, it's an organic aspect of our therapy. I mean, it's a professional relationship, but in many ways, like, it has the comfort factor of talking to a friend. Like, there's always that layer of, like, okay, she's going to be the expert in giving me advice, but, like, it feels very organic and comfortable. And, like, you would talk with a friend, like, if someone isn't being helpful or crosses a boundary in a bad way, you know, that's going to be very apparent. I fortunately never had that issue with my therapist, but many, many times, like, because it's cognitive based, like, she has a lot of recommendations of sort of like tricks and things that I can try, practices I can implement into my daily life to address certain problems. And it's always going to be followed up with, like, how did that work for you? You know, or if it didn't, like, let's talk about that. And definitely sort of, she is very sharp in, like, taking note of what's something that I'm going to engage with and what I'm not going to engage with. And then being very honest about, like, recommendations of what to do next. I think with a very, like, practiced, experienced therapist, it's just going to be an organic part of the relationship where they are going to be taking note of what you try, what you don't try, your energy level in engaging on certain approaches, you know, and I think that when you have when you feel comfortable enough to be vulnerable with them consistently, you inherently feel comfortable enough to also let them know if, like, hey, like, yeah, that is an issue I have, but it's not even what I really want to talk about right now. Or, yeah, you know, to be honest, that didn't work for me. Like, you don't feel guilty in just coming forth about what your honest reaction was to certain things. That said, like, I definitely, like, in the mental health Twitterverse or social media, like, people being like, oh, I don't want to disappoint my therapist. And, like, you know, there's certainly, like, a factor of that of, like, oh, should I bring this up? I don't want her to think, like, you know, I suck or whatever. But I don't know. I'm definitely committed to being as, like, personally, my approach is to be as honest as I can. And if there's a certain thing that I know that, like, is still an issue that I have definitely addressed before, then yeah, I might actually just draw a big circle around it, you know, because it's clearly an area I should address.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think with the right therapist, it's an organic part of it.
Having a therapist is such an interesting relationship. And I also feel like for people that maybe are not as experienced with therapy, when you first go into it, the most interesting part, right? So we're human beings and we have relationships with everyone, whether it be personal or professional. And so a therapist relationship is a professional relationship, but you're talking about very personal things. So there's a lot of, like, boundaries you're crossing over and it feels rather uncomfortable. And one thing that, you know, I remember first noticing is that when you're in therapy session and you're talking, it's very one-sided. Well, of course it is, right? Because they're there to help you. It's not about them telling you about their day or what they're dealing with. It's about you kind of talking through your feelings and what you're going through. And it feels rather unnatural because you feel like, oh, the whole setting is to go and have this conversation. But a lot of the time it's really just them listening and then asking questions, follow-up questions that then lead to, you know, more conversations. I think a common misconception with therapy is that people think that, oh, you go into therapy and they just, like, tell you what's wrong with you, like, upfront, you know, first session, like, okay, here's all your issues, all that stuff. But
no, God, I wish it was like that.
Oh yeah, we all would, right?
I hate that first session is just so awkward because it's just like, you're kind of like delving into everything and I just want him to know what I'm already about before. But exactly. Why do I need to talk about myself? Can't you just tell me what's wrong just by looking at me?
You gotta lay the groundwork. And something that I've kind of noticed is that, like, yes, later down the line, they kind of tell you, oh, that seems to be related to this, or, you know, this might be an issue. A lot of the time, the realizations you have come from yourself. Like, therapists are just there to kind of guide you to the realization, not necessarily tell you what's wrong. And it's a very interesting kind of relationship because I think, yeah, a lot of people have a lot of misconceptions about it, that you go in there and they just tell you what's wrong and then, you know, then you just work on it. But it's really more of a gradual thing and more of a self-actualization process. And they help you get there. And sometimes they, you know, call out certain things, but it's really you doing the discovery. It's not necessarily them telling you this is what's up. And I don't know. It's just, I think, a common misconception. What do you think are the other common misconceptions with therapy are?
One thing I think people get hung up on, and this is not a byproduct of, like, oh, this is a bad relationship, which is a different scenario. But sometimes you do leave therapy and you feel awful. And that's part of it. Unfortunately, like, you're not, like, every time you go to a session, you're revisiting stuff that you normally try not to, like, dwell on. You know, that's the whole point. Or maybe you have been dwelling on it and now you're just diving in even further. And, like, there's a level of exhaustion depending on what it is you're addressing. And sometimes you leave and you feel really crappy. And when that's happened, like, I have never regretted still sticking to it and following certain guidelines or practices, and then showing up again the next time and being like, oh, you know what? Speaking to self-actualization, like realizing X, Y, and Z, and then you address that and you understand that, like, you know, you're pulling back these layers. Therapy is not something you're going to feel like butterflies and happiness every time. It's really hard work. Committing to this process is intense. And it brings up some really intense realizations. And then once you start working on things like setting boundaries or not being codependent and stuff like that, then that's also really hard, because then all of a sudden you're trying to rewire your framework, and you have to become more and more aware of your habits. And that's really nasty, because it's like this mirror constantly in front of you, and you're like, oh God, like, I didn't realize I've been doing this and that. Yeah, so I definitely think that's a big one.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I think there is a certain aspect where, yeah, you're just going to kind of feel awful. I do feel like, just based on the experience that you had, Frances, like the kind of awful you were feeling was not necessarily like a productive awful, or like processing very unfortunate. Like, that was when you told me
that was very different.
Yeah. When you told me about that experience, I was like, so I felt so badly for you, because as someone who, you know, is such a huge like advocate for therapy and has like gotten a lot of value from therapy, I just hated that that was sort of your introduction, because it's really not supposed to be like that. So I am sorry about that. But yeah,
it was just kind of a weird session. Like, me coming out of these sessions, I remember like one day that I was like on the verge of tears, when I wasn't even like feeling like super down or depressed. I had like this really bad meeting with a client. And I just remember he was asking how my day was. And I said, you know, I was honest about my client and just how it made me feel. And I forget what he said. He told me like, well, are you sure he made you feel bad? Like, is it because of, you know, like maybe something that you were also feeling? And it was like, no, he basically told me to shut up. Like, I don't know how else to turn this situation in, like, into something. I don't know. Like, maybe it was because I was feeling defensive. Maybe this is, but
no, I think you're right. Yeah. To me, just in not being in the room, of course, but it sounds to me like he was trying to make a mountain out of a molehill, when you were like, no, I'm telling you up front what the problem was. Like, your therapist should have said, well, I'm sorry, and then helped you dig into, you know, the sort of feelings that this unfortunate situation brought up, versus like trying to make it into something else.
Yeah. And that kind of highlighted like every session I had with him, was where, you know, like, I would describe an issue like the, like pandemic related stuff that's like outside of my control, but he'd be like, well, how can we make things back into your controls? Like, well, I don't know. Like, this, there's a wedding that's happening that is causing a lot of like angst. So I don't know how I can, like, it just kind of felt like, I was sort of responsible for a lot of the issues that were going on in my life, when I don't know, like, and he kind of just helped reinforce more of the helplessness that I felt at the time. I just never came out of that feeling good.
I'm sorry you experienced that. I agree with Alana, like, that your scenario is definitely like an unfortunate, like, different one from sometimes feeling bad after therapy, because you're digging through things. Like, you, it sounds to me like that relationship just wasn't good, and like, what, not what you needed.
Yeah, can fully, like, 100% not a therapist, never went to school for therapy, but in that situation where you're explaining, hey, I had this, you know, meeting, it didn't go well, and it made me feel this, your therapist's response should have been, oh, that's interesting. Why do you think it made you feel that way? And from there, you have a conversation. Like, that is how every therapist I've ever spoken to is like, oh, that's interesting. You know, why do you think you felt that way? Or what was it about that situation that made you feel that way? It's not like, oh, well, sounds like you were just being a jerk, or, oh, well, blah, blah. I don't know. Just like the way that he presented that was just very like,
Because like, I like, one tidbit I remember, he was like, well, maybe the client was having a bad day. And I'm like, okay, but, you know, it still doesn't excuse the fact that he told me to shut up. Like, like, this is a, and I was, this wasn't even something I wanted to bring up in therapy. I was just being honest about my day. And, you know, like, I knew I was going to deal with it in some fashion, you know, in a more constructive way, but I didn't need for him to kind of like, you know, like kind of turn the narrative around. And it just felt weird.
One of the most validating moments of my life was when my therapist said to me, yeah, your mother was a horrible mother. Your mother was a shitty mom. Like, hearing that come out of a professional's mouth was so validating. I can't even tell you. And that's what you needed to hear. Yeah, that guy was shitty. Like, you just needed someone to understand what it is that you we're feeling, you know, acknowledging right. that.
Yeah.
Versus saying, oh, well, let's find empathy for your abuser. Like, some, that person needs to go back to school. That's how I feel about it.
Thanks. This, like, conversation is really.
Okay, I was just about to say, can we please ignore
your husband?
I don't understand
no.
what's going on. Wow. Okay. I'm actually gonna yell.
Are you gonna mute him? Do you want me to mute him?
we can ban him. Hold on. I can kick him. I'm kicking him right now. And there we go.
He says no. You know what? Sometimes you just need a little levity in the midst of.
I know.
Really, I mean, I will say that lighten the mood a little bit.
I think this is like a good bookend to like to at least this, right? Like, I think we've got a lot of great stuff, and thank you, Ali, so much for being honest and open about your experience with therapy.
My pleasure.
Yeah, like, and you know, I attribute a lot, like in our last episode, I attribute Alana's openness to her therapy is helping me out. But I think you're also one of the big factors for me also kind of coming to terms with it, along with Chris, but you know, if you're the big three influences in my life. So, you know, thank you for being open about your experience. I really do truly appreciate that.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're one of my best friends, and I want you to enjoy life. And I definitely think therapy is a big part of helping us have better quality of life.
Agreed. Alana, any closing words?
Yes, of course, always, please. It's me.
I know. Yeah. That's why I had to just be like, throw you that bone.
Yeah. So well, yeah, I am just very grateful to have you both in my life for many reasons. I'm kind of holding back some of those reasons for the gratitude portion of the show. But yeah, no, therapy is really awesome. And I hope that through just talking through some of this stuff, we're able to really normalize and maybe shed some light on some of the misconceptions, because perhaps some of these misconceptions or these experiences, you know, Francis didn't have a good experience, and other people might have a bad experience that might kind of dissuade them from trying again or from looking, you know, maybe therapy's just not for me, when it's really just the therapist that didn't work out. And so, yeah, I just hope that people find some value and maybe some looking at therapy with a new lens and a new kind of perspective, because I just think it's really wonderful and helpful.
You guys are wonderful and helpful in doing this.
Well, we only have one listener, Ali, so
yes.
We hope she takes a lot from this.
You have that. That's it. You just reach one person in life, right? That's
That's it for our show, folks. I'm Francis.
And I'm Alana. And you can find us on Instagram at hqaf.productions. We post every other week.
And you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts.
And until next time,
the best ship to sail on is friendship.